You can't even mention what the other side in a war wants, what they're saying, without being an apologist. And that is asinine. It is self-defeating. Gone far enough, it will be self-destructive. Because if you don't know what the other side says, if you don't know what they want, and if you're not willing to talk to them to try to find out, there is this much chance that you're going to get anything done. And then you guarantee that the only path you leave for your opposition is war and more war. And ultimately, because of the balance of power that exists between the two sides, you condemn Ukraine to death. That's where we are. So we're not going to follow that path. Viktor Orban doesn't. President Trump doesn't. I'm a critic of President Trump in many areas, but when he's right, I'm going to congratulate him and enthusiastically support it. This is one of those times. I have said from the beginning that at least, unlike his predecessor, he is willing to talk and engage with the Russians. I wish he would do a little bit more on the decisive action stuff, because there could have been some off-ramps he could have taken, but he was listening to other people. We'll talk about that another day, but right now, that's still the possibility. But we are going to listen to what the Russian says, because it shows that Orban is also listening and has a rational, logical path to get this war over with, without the complete and total destruction of hundreds of thousands of more Ukrainians, the destruction of more cities at all. Here is, in fact, earlier today, I think, or maybe it was yesterday, Dmitry Peskov is saying something very similar. Before this meeting had even taken place, here's how he saw it.
Ну, главное, что сейчас тормозит процесс урегулирования, это та пауза, которая возникла из-за нежелания украинской стороны идти по пути политики дипломатического урегулирования и из-за провоцирования, собственно, киевского режима со стороны европейцев на продолжение дальнейших боевых действий. Безусловно, говорить сейчас о каком-то взаимном доверии не приходится.
Yeah, so he was asked, you know, is there any mutual trust between these two sides? It's ridiculous to even talk about it, because right now we aren't even talking. So you've got NATO, and you've got, of course, all the leading European countries continuing to only talk about war. Keir Starmer relentlessly talks about supporting Ukraine, giving them the Storm Shadow missiles. That's even in this past week. There's been reports that there's been more Storm Shadow missiles given, helping Ukraine fire deeper into Russia. Something, I don't know if it was Storm Shadow or even something domestically produced by Ukraine, had a major strike on a Russian oil facility, another one in the southern part of their country. That certainly is going to be felt. It's certainly going to be a pain point. But unfortunately, as I keep telling people over and over, it's just a small number. And whatever these pain points are, they're pinpricks. And they can annoy Russia, but they're not going to stop them. Because you don't have to figure this out. Look at that. The number of missiles fired by Russia in just this month dwarfs by a substantial margin anything that the West is going to do. And when you add in all the glide bombs, the multiple launch rockets and the drones, especially the Garand drones, both the twos and the threes, hundreds of them, actually into the thousands when you're talking about the month. I think there was 40,000 so far this year have been launched by the Russian side. The month of October was the biggest one yet. They keep growing. They keep getting bigger. And that doesn't even count the somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 drones in the tactical level per day. That's what's happening on the front line there. So it's absurd to say we're just not going to talk and we're just going to keep fighting and we're going to keep giving these pinprick capabilities to the Ukraine side. It briefs well and it works well in the Western media, and it sounds good to somebody who doesn't understand the scale and the off the charts imbalance between what the two sides are doing. And the fact that even with Russia, with all of this stuff and a paucity of air defense capacity, still can't knock Ukraine out of the war at the strategic level, then it's beyond absurd to suggest that a handful is going to have any negative effect, measurable effect on the Russian side. And it hasn't. All the stuff that we've done for now nearly 4 years, it hasn't worked. Whether you've had Hodges constantly, we need more long-range weapons. Remember, 2000, at the end of 2022, at the beginning of 2023, he audaciously said that Ukraine would be in Crimea by the August of 2023. That's what he said before the offensive, even after it obviously failed. He still stayed with that. We just need to give them the long-range missiles. Well, they got long-range missiles, and it didn't make any difference. They got the F-16s, and it didn't make any difference. They have all these, the Storm Shadow missiles, the ATACMs, all this stuff, and it never mattered. And instead of acknowledging reality like Viktor Orban is doing, like he's trying to get President Trump to do, they just stay oblivious to this and continue going forward. Now, Maria Zakharova, she doesn't just blame Ukraine, Europeans altogether. She pinpoints in on the UK.
Times change, but the malicious goals of the Russophobes in Britain toward our country and the inhumane methods of achieving them remain the same. Supplying explosives and weapons, sponsoring murders and terrorist acts, intimidating the civilian population. The same arsenal of influence measures is traditionally kept ready in London for anyone who disagrees with its neo-colonial mindset and practices. It seems that this disease of the British political class is incurable and only produces increasingly terrible ulcers throughout the entire British community.
So I'm not sure how far that last part's going to go about, causing ulcers in the British community. I doubt that they're needing any help from Maria Zakharova to let them feel any of their pain. They're probably doing that on their own. But some of her points are valid. It's the only thing the UK cares about is more weapons. And then you have how all of this impacts on Volodymyr Zelensky, because it was mentioned there about, I think Peskov said the same thing in his comments, that all of the Europeans, they keep encouraging the Ukraine side to reject any offer for peace and move forward. Now, let's bear in mind that there has been, I may be getting the numbers wrong, somewhere between 5 and maybe even 7 phone calls between Trump and Putin since he was inaugurated in January. There's been numerous visits from Witkoff, who has gone and talked sometimes many, many hours long conversations with Putin. Putin and Trump met in Alaska. Of course, they just had another 2.5 hour phone call the other day. The Russians continue to say, we're willing to have conversations, we're willing to have discussions. They had some direct bilateral meetings in Istanbul, 2 levels of it, directly with the Ukraine, all that this year. Okay. Bear in mind, I'm saying all this for a reason. That's a lot of diplomatic activity that's gone on, that the Russians continue to show that they're willing to have a diplomatic settlement on their terms, and those terms are ugly, but they are at the table and they're willing to talk. However, when you listen to the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, you might come up with a different idea.
Regarding your point about Russia being at the negotiating table, frankly, I'm surprised, because so far, no one has been able to bring the Russians to the table, neither the US president nor any European leader. So I'm just surprised even by this signal regarding. This is exactly what everyone wants, to make Russians start talking.
I mean, what do you do with that, right? I really wish I could show that soundbite to President Trump right now with Viktor Orban sitting at that table and say, this is the guy you're working with here. All those things I just mentioned, your phone calls, these people that have your adversary or emissaries that you've sent off, the conversations that have happened, the direct conversations between Russia and Ukraine, all of these talks, all of these claims of the Russians, to include today from Dmitry Peskov, they're still willing to talk, but the clock is running down on that. And yet, here's this guy. He actually sits there and says to the cameras, he was asked specifically, one of the reporters, and he mocked the reporter. I can't believe you're even asking that question. Everybody's trying to get Russia to the table, but they won't come. That's why we need all these sanctions. We've got to force them to come to the table, and they won't do it. So I can't believe you asked the question. One may reasonably ask, are you intellectually capable of engaging with America, with Donald Trump, if your understanding of reality is so disjointed and so disconnected completely from objective reality? See, if he says, well, we've been talking to them all year and we've had these conversations, some private, some public, but we're just, we can't narrow the gap. That would be one thing. That would still be a problem, but at least it's a matter of interpretations. But instead, he's just saying, we got to get them to the table. They're not even at the table. And he's been saying that a lot. I just grabbed this one because it was so recent. That was just a few days ago. But he's sitting there saying, we're just trying to get them to the table so that we can start the negotiations. Now, almost certainly what he really means is we want to get them to the table on our terms. And so these things that we know they've had, that they've communicated to us, these 12-point plans and all this kind of stuff, we don't like any of it. And so we gave them our own 12-point plan, which is, of course, is detached from reality because the side that has the power is certainly not going to submit and give in to the side that's on the lower side of the balance of power. But he wants them to say, no, we want to change it and flip it so that we won't talk to them until they come begging us for a deal. And here's the perverse part that's also true. And man, don't miss this, folks. Don't miss this. In the event that conditions on the battlefield were to change to the point that Russia would say, all right, you know what? The pain is getting a lot higher here. We've been hitting these oil infrastructures. I tell you what, we're going to go ahead and we'll go ahead and talk now. This issue where you just want to freeze the line of contact and have the negotiations there. Sure, we'll do it. The minute that the Ukraine side and the European side thinks that, whoa, Russia is now going weak kneed. Now that they're willing to talk here, the last thing they're going to do is have a negotiation. They're not going to talk anything. They're going to go, man, we need more pressure. We need to push even harder, and then we'll get them back. Do you understand what I'm saying? The mentality here is that the second that they perceive an advantage, they aren't going to give in on anything. So there's no truth to it. They are not saying we want Russia to come back so that we can have a negotiated settlement here. I don't even think that they thought this through in their own minds here, because there's just no way they're going to accept that. If they would accept it, we would have already seen it, because this is not theoretical. We've already had this. In November of 2022, so after Ukraine had what's almost certainly going to be their two battlefield victories in the entire war, which is when they forced Russia to abandon Kherson City and a large swath of the southern part of their holdings, and when they drove them out of large sections of the Kharkiv region in the north, the U.S. The Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, went public, and this is even during the Biden administration, and says, you know, I mean, I'm just talking out loud here. I'm paraphrasing, of course. I'm just talking out loud here, but it would be a really good idea if, I don't know, somebody said, hey, how about we have a negotiated settlement now? Because the Russians are hurting. They're hurting real bad, he said. And this is the best time to have a negotiated settlement when they're on their back foot. They had just announced a mobilization of 300,000, and they were having a whale of a difficult time matriculating them in because they didn't have uniforms, belts, buckles, bullets, guns. I mean, they didn't have anything that people needed. And they were literally just throwing whatever they could on these guys and throwing them up to the front to stem the tide there. And it took them a long time to get that under order. So they were definitely on the back foot. They had not yet even started the large-scale recruitment drive that would later be very successful. Meanwhile, the Ukraine side had all of its success. So you had an American general who said, this is your time. You can get a pretty good deal right now. And they could have. They could have gotten a good deal. But instead, the minute Zelensky saw those two battlefield successes, his eyes got this big and he just couldn't see anything else. And he couldn't look at the fact that, okay, the potential, the industrial capacity, the personnel capacity, and the potential that each side had was still way off the charts. You never had a chance to, those didn't change. Whatever happened on the tactical and even operational battlefields didn't change the strategic calculation at all. It didn't change the life and death issue, the existential threat that the Russians viewed. That didn't change at all. The only thing it changed was a temporary momentum on the battlefield, which could have been predictable. But when you had a chance to do what's rational and saying, this is the best we're going to get, we can probably get a negotiated settlement that will not be the terrible deal that they have now, they didn't take it. And obviously, they didn't take the one in April 2022 in Istanbul either. But they rejected the last chance because it looked like they were on the top. So now then, if ever anything happened in the future, they would do the same thing again. It's the same people. Why would they be different going in forward? They're not going to. But this time, they're not going to get that chance. So where we are right now, let's just be frank and let's just call this out right now. So right now, as we're speaking, Donald Trump, Viktor Orban are somewhere in the White House having these conversations. If Trump was smart, and I would wager a lot of money that Orban is giving him a plan somewhat like this, let's end the war now. Let's say we're going to stop our support for Ukraine, and we're going to stop giving this open-ended military equipment, and we're going to insist that Europe and Ukraine come up with the best deal that they can, and we'll push as hard as we can, and you know, not just hand over to Russia whatever, a blank piece of paper, whatever they're asking for, but we'll still push you. And there is some leverage. They do have some things that they could, even through offer to remove sanctions, to cause other pressure some other places, to drag some things out. There are some, not a lot, but there's a little bit of leverage. But they could play that because Russia has an incentive and a motivation to get the war over. They also want the war over. They, despite this absurd comic view of what the Russians want is rebuild the USSR, there's no evidence of that. But there is lots of evidence that they want the war over through negotiations. If nothing else, put them to the test. But you could do that right now. And if Trump is firm and staunch, says, hey, we'll help Ukraine with, you know, instead of throwing all these billions of dollars that the Europeans are doing into just an empty hole of more bullets and bombs that can't change the outcome, we'll put some money into helping rebuild. We'll get the best deal for them we can, et cetera. Something that actually has a positive outcome, something that helps build economic activity, that helps all kinds of people. Lots of things that you could do there. That's one option. And I bet Viktor Orban is pushing toward that. And if Trump were to just tighten his belt up and just say, all right, I'm just going to go all in on this, something that actually is logical and rational, this is where we're going to go, this would be a lot less bad than it's going to be. I notice I didn't say that'd be a good outcome, because there is no good outcome available. It's way too late for that. But there is an acceptable outcome that can end the damage and start slowly the process of rebuilding and recovery and all kinds of things that would portend ability to have a peaceful and prosperous future for all of Europe, for Russia, for Ukraine, and the United States, that would take to way low levels any risk of nuclear escalation or any other kind of conflict. That is 100%, without a question, the area and the way we should go. If we don't, if that's not what happens, or if after Orban leaves and somebody gets in line next and Keir Starmer gets on the phone, Emmanuel Macron gets on the phone, and they walk Trump back to where he was before, then almost certainly the outcome is going to be the destruction of Ukraine. The destruction of the Ukrainian government under Zelensky, given enough time and the resources that already exist, Russia will end up going for it. You saw Larry Johnson earlier this week that he said, in his view, this means probably going all the way and taking Odessa in the south, cutting off completely the access to all the ports in both the Azov and the Black Seas, going up to probably Kharkiv City in the north, possibly even up to the Kiev if it went that far, all the way through the Dnieper River and all areas even close to that, all the way up to the northern part. I mean, they could literally lose everything. And that, if you don't reach the goal, the diplomatic goal I laid out there, understand this, folks. The only thing you're leaving Russia is what I just described there. There's no other option. They don't have the ability to just say, all right, you know what? I'm tired of this war. Let's just stop here and we'll just call it a day and keep what we have, because now all of the conditions that led to the war are still fully engaged, and all of the pipelines from NATO and all these things that the Europeans have been doing since this war started are all fully engaged and will only ramp up over time. And so Russia would logically say that will only mean that they're going to build back up until there's another war, except they'll be a lot stronger whenever they choose to do it later. It would be insane for Russia to do that. So the only logical thing you are giving to the Russian side is to say you must conquer everything. That is, listen to me carefully, folks, here in November, the 2025, that's where we are. That's where this inflection point, that's why this meeting is potentially so important, because you're at an inflection point. You can go this way, do something that makes sense and could change the course of history for all of Europe, or you cannot take that path and just let the status quo go and just keep on listening to all these guys in Europe. And you were virtually writing the death sentence and the death certificate for Ukraine and keeping alive and keeping higher the risk of conflict between the West and the East, and keeping alive the possibility of nuclear conflict later on, or direct clash between NATO and Russia, and in which everybody loses. Russia won't win in that case. We won't win in that case. We'll lose a lot worse. The way I just lay it out here is a success. I don't think I would go so far as to call it a win because of the disaster and the wreckage that's already existed for the last nearly 4 years, but it could be a success. It could be a medium and long-term success. And I pray to God that we get that done. We'll wait and see. We'll stay on top of it like we always do, because we are unintimidated and uncompromised to give you the truth, no matter what it is, no matter what anybody thinks about it. The truth is the truth, and that's what we lay it out there. As a reminder, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict. A lot of your friends, I think, actually like to get your information via podcast, and they'll listen to that more than they'll watch a video. Don't let them miss out on this stuff too. Send that information to them. Same thing on the written format. Others like to get their information being read. And so we are on Substack at DanielDavisDeepDive.substack.com. So however you want to get your information, we've got it there available for you. So be sure and pass that on to your friends, and we will look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.